This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we got answers on some things yesterday, as we welcome you back into the 7 o'clock hour here. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. Nice to be with you on a Tuesday morning. The Texans had their annual charity golf tournament yesterday over at River Oaks Country Club. D'Amico Ryans met with the media. The McNairs met with the media. Mike Tolman, the new president of the team, met with the media. The McNairs and Mike Tolman particularly were talking about stadium issues, a possible new headquarters for the team that'll land somewhere. If they indeed decide to move their headquarters and practice facility, will land somewhere in the greater Houston area. We'll get to that in just a minute. D'Amico Ryans did meet with the media as well and was asked about Arianti Urcery, their second-round pick. This is an offensive line where you got a lot of guys that are forecasted to possibly play multiple positions. Centers playing guards, guards playing centers, tackles playing guards. Those are all in play. Is that in play for rookie Arianti Urcery, D'Amico?
Adding Urcery to our team through the draft, really liked his tape and called him at tackle. He played left tackle, so we'll start him out at tackle and see how he does there. My vision for him is always he can help us at tackle.
Okay. So tackle, he is going to be, yep. we can at least for the time being, Seth, put any talk about Arianti Urcery at right or left guard off the grid for now.
Yeah, and I know there's, it's my feel on it is that he just doesn't strike me as a guard. He's 6 foot six, not extraordinarily tall, but he's a 6 foot six and he doesn't play with great knee bend. It's hard for guys like that to go down and play in that phone booth sometimes. So I like him as a tackle, and I hope he gets to just stay there and doesn't get pressed into emergency duty or what have you. There's a problem in this country, in America today, and people are way too eager to call an offensive lineman versatile.
That is
the greatest problem we face as Americans today.
It's true.
And it's not as simple as just moving a guy and saying, oh, look, he did it.
Yeah.
He moved there. That's like if you put me in a nuclear physicist chair,
yeah,
and say, like, oh, look, Seth's sitting in a nuclear physicist chair. Everything's cool now. No, there's going to be a meltdown. I'm gonna create huge issues. They're like, yes, but you have a name tag that says nuclear physicist. So you can't just slap a tackle at guard and say he's versatile.
Yes.
You gotta actually be good at various other things. Let the rookie learn how to play tackle, damn it.
And I would say nuclear Armageddon and CJ Stroud getting repeatedly hit because of pressure coming from the inside.
Yes.
Very equal. They're
just
the same exact
thing.
Just as
equally dire, yes, and crucial as any other actual problem in America.
That analogy holds up perfectly. Absolutely. So I guess, Seth, if we're looking at training camp here, we're not that far off. I mean, the rookie mini camp is Friday, which means OTAs is right after that, which means training camp is going to, you know, we're under 3 months away from training camp. I think Cam Robinson's going to be the left tackle for this team. I feel pretty confident in that. It's Titus Howard. If I had to pick which way the possession arrow is pointing right now, I would say guard. I don't feel super confident in that, but let's just say for purposes of this conversation, he's the left guard. So the left side of your line is kind of nailed down. Does Urcery and Blake Fisher become one of the most intriguing position battles in camp, if those indeed are the two that are duking it out at right tackle?
Yeah. I think that if one of those guys emerges, then there's a chance that Titus Howard will be the guard and you'll have a little bit of clarity.
You just used,
I guess
you used 2 second round picks on tackles. I almost feel like, man, one of them better emerge.
Right.
Like, you know, in camp. Like, right. One of them better emerge, or you're trending towards a couple of second round picks being burned
gotta,
on at best a swing tackle.
You right. Know? You got to hit on one of those guys
at
some point.
Yeah.
And Blake Fisher's a huge X factor in a lot of this. I think that now, but they could easily end up just having Titus play right tackle, and you've got guys that are at the very least starters right there slotted in as a starter at guard. It gets a little interesting just because Tomlinson has only ever played left guard, so do you move him, you know, does he compete for both left and right guard, or does Titus actually get a shot at right guard? I don't know. I think it's a wide open competition at every spot. I do feel genuinely like Titus isn't guaranteed a starting position. I think that there's going to be a battle in training camp. He'll have the leg up, obviously. Yeah. But if somebody really impresses them, I think every guy in that room is going to have a genuine opportunity to get a look as a starter if he plays that well during training.
I don't think
camp.
Cam Robinson's guaranteed the starting left tackle position either. Like, those are the two. Cam Robinson and Titus Howard are the two closest to putting in ink, at least playing and starting. I don't know what position for Titus.
It was the weirdest thing last year is that through training camp, it became very obvious that, all right, this offensive line is not a finished product. The starters as a group barely played together at all in preseason games, and yet there was this feeling that, nope, these are your starters along the offensive line. And I felt really bad about it, and it never got any better. They didn't play their way into it. I guess it got a little bit better in some regards towards the end of the season, but that's the battle to watch this training camp.
Yep. D'Amico Ryans was asked. I thought this was an interesting question because I've wondered this myself. You went out and traded for C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Kalen Bullock made a big step up as a rookie last year. Jalen Petrie is not a safety he's a safety by name on the roster, but he doesn't function as a safety as much. But you've got a lot of bodies at safety, and Jimmy Ward is still here. They extended him for a third year during the season last year, so he's back. And it's fair to wonder, especially with them having made the Gardner-Johnson trade, what's Jimmy Ward's role with the team?
Jimmy's doing fine. Jimmy's on the road to recovery as well. He's doing fine. He's out of his boot now. He's starting to get back into running a little bit. So he's in a good spot. And Jimmy is a great football player. I love Jimmy. I love how he plays the game. And again, same whenever Jimmy is ready. I know Jimmy can help our football team win games. We saw him make game-changing plays for us, big-time plays and big moments. And whenever he's out there, he'll do it. He's a football player. So what I love about him, he's played multiple spots in the defense. So I'm excited to see just whenever he's ready, it doesn't hurt to have a lot of good safeties on your team.
When he said he was out of his boot, that was one of those, I guess, reporting a positive thing, but because of the timing of it and the fact that we're in May, I kind of thought, oh, I thought he would have been out of his boot a while before that.
Yeah,
all right. Just how extensive was this surgery?
Yeah.
So I think Jimmy Ward's going to be a guy we probably don't see much of during training camp because they're going to be very careful with him, but he's always going to be there at the ready. He's like a better version of Joe Flacco in Cleveland. Joe Flacco during training camp is probably just going to be advising people on the sidelines, but you know that, all right, now that Flacco is going to be a break glass in case of emergency type of situation in Cleveland. Jimmy Ward they're going to use, but it'll be – I think they can mix and match him wherever they need to in any given week. They can – depending on the injury situation or what have you, he can be a free safety. He can come up and he can play that nickel backer if he has to because of injuries. So hopefully that works out for him because he's well into his 30s now and he's been injured pretty much every year for the past several years.
I think getting C.J. Gardner-Johnson sets Jimmy Ward up to be in a perfect role at this, to your point, Seth, this stage of his career. He playing a full workload, he can't stay on the field.
Yeah.
He's had so many different injuries, and not all of them have been, you know, just bad luck. Like the one he had last year, like he broke the foot. I think it was a broken foot he got. Like he just landed on it wrong, whatever. But his first year with the team, it was a quad, it was a hamstring, it was older guy injuries, you know? And so I think this is perfect. If you got Kalen Bullock and C.J. Gardner-Johnson as your two starting safeties, and Jimmy Ward is there, A, as depth in case one of them goes out with an injury, or more likely, week to week, it would be in, you know, sort of a nickel or dime role. Like, he can place, you know, he can play up there in the slot. He can cover guys out of the slot. He's played slot corner before, so I think he could be. And then you add the leadership element into it, which that room is just is boiling over with, that secondary room right now. I think he's got a role with the team.
Right. Well, and just to illustrate it, he's going to be 34 years old this year. In his career, he's played 11 seasons. He's only had two seasons where he played all 16 games.
Yeah.
You know, before they changed the schedule. But then in the last 2 years, he's played 10 games in each of those years.
Yeah.
In 2022, his last year in San Francisco, he played 12 games, and now he's 34 years old. So it's, yeah, if you were going to go into the season expecting him to be a full-time starter or something, you'd really be in deep water. So as a role player, yeah, hopefully he'll come up big in some big moments.
We got a Tank Dell update, and we don't have audio of it because all the clips that were out there on the internet from the media sessions yesterday, there was not good. The quality of the audio on the Tank answers wasn't great. And that said, it wasn't a lot of new stuff. It's the Tank Dell news cycle is a strange one right now. It almost feels like we here in Houston feel like, yeah, he's not going to play next year. Or if he does, it's going to be at the very end of the year. And yet, anytime somebody says something about it with the Texans, it at least over the last couple of weeks, it does seem to get picked up as some sort of news.
An update. The update is, DeMeco has said this at least twice and maybe three times now. He's in good spirits.
Right.
He's in good spirits. And DeMeco is very specific. This is how I would read into it, Sean. DeMeco has flat out said, we're not putting any timetable on this. And I think most of us feel like, boy, an injury like that for a wide receiver, it's 50-50 whether the guy even comes back to play football again. And when they do play football again, they're not the same version of themselves typically. That it's found money, and it would be an awesome and inspirational story if he came back and looked like himself this year. But you just got to kind of put that off on a shelf and maybe worry about it in December or January or something. And that would be somewhat of a, I don't want to say a miraculous comeback, but an unlikely comeback if he comes back in December.
Yeah, I don't think it's a complete accident or coincidence that, you know, Jalen Knoll is there at 79. Like, there's the best player on our board. Let's take it. Like, I think there's some connective tissue between drafting Jalen Knoll and whatever it is Tank Dell's situation is right now.
Nick has said that they do look at what a guy's role on the team will be.
Yes.
And that's where I think you finagle your way around the drafting for need part by saying, okay, we're going to draft a guy, but we want the best player available who's actually going to contribute to the team this year. You traded for Christian Kirk in the offseason.
Yes.
You draft a slot receiver in the draft.
Yep.
Like, those are roles that if they expect the Tank Dell to play this year, I don't think ideally that they're going to be spending all these assets on having three slot receivers.
Smaller
on your team.
Receivers, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I agree with that.
The other thing, too, remember, DeMeco last year, and I don't think he was lying, but he felt like during training camp, he said Christian Harris will be just fine. And, he'll be ready to go.
You didn't hear him say, in week 15.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, so he didn't couch that much at all.
No.
And I think with Tank, it's DeMeco specifically saying, we're not putting a timetable on
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, so, and by the way, mentioning Nick Caserio, he will join us tomorrow on the show. Almost a little over 24 hours from now, 7:30 tomorrow morning, Texans Executive Vice President and General Manager Nick Caserio joining us in advance of rookie minicamp coming up this weekend. And the first time we've had a chance to chat with him since the draft a couple of weeks ago. So we'll
first time he's had a chance to chat with us.
Thank
Sean.
You. Yeah, that's true. I got to put
phrasing.
Us over, not him.
Yeah.
By the way, did you see, I know you did, Tank's tattoo that he got, his sleeve that he got on his leg?
Yeah. I feel like
a heel turn's coming pretty soon with
Tank. I was freaked out by two things.
Yeah.
One was the tattoo itself, which is like a montage of horror movie characters.
Yeah, he's got Chucky on there from the Child's Play franchise.
Yeah.
And he's got a tribute to Michael Myers as well, among others, it looks like.
But the other thing was that he did the old Dak Prescott where they actually anesthetized him while they were doing this sleeve.
I would want to be too. This is a lot of ink, man.
I don't like this trend. Listen, man, anytime you go under general anesthesia, you're taking a risk. I feel like anything that you go through that you feel Anytime you go through a voluntary procedure where you're being anesthetized for it, I would just say, hey, maybe take your time, be patient, do it over the course of, just be conscious and do this over the course of a bunch of different sessions.
But maybe this injury that he suffered in that Kansas City game, that gruesome leg injury, has created a new tank, you know, a new devil may care, borderline heel turn, mad at the world, Tank Dell, you know, it just, or maybe he's like, you know, it's like when Tony Soprano got shot, you know, afterwards and he survives. He's like, you know what? Every day is a gift. And I know Tank wasn't going to die from this knee injury, but maybe he's got that outlook. Like, you know what? I got to suck the marrow out of the bone of life here. You know, I've always wanted a leg sleeve with Michael Myers and Chucky and various other horror characters on my leg. Damn it, I'm going to go do it. I don't know if I'm going to be here tomorrow. I could suffer a gruesome head injury. I have no idea.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
YOLO. You only get ink like this once in your life,
that's it,
apparently.
Yeah.
Dak Prescott did this a couple years ago, and I remember I didn't realize that this was – it's not common, but it's not unheard of to get anesthetized to get a sleeve put on. And the tattoo community came at me hard, so I got an education in it.
So the same thing, presumably, that he did when he got his multiple knee surgeries, he did to get a tattoo, which is get put under.
I guess that's part of it too. Is like, man, Tank Dell's little body has been put through a lot of hell over the last couple of years. He's got a gunshot wound. He had that broken leg. It was a bad broken leg. He's had this horrific injury.
Yeah.
You don't have to stack one more thing on top of it in terms of trauma.
I have so many questions. Like, if you're a tattoo person, especially if you're a tattoo artist, text in. So this anesthesia, like him put, he's this, so they put him completely out. Are they doing this in the tattoo store, or do they go somewhere that's maybe, I don't know, the tattoo stores that I drive by, Seth? I would be a little concerned about getting anesthetized in those places. Anesthetized at the hospital. It looks like a very sterile place, but I drive by driving down Westheimer and I see the tattoo parlors that are in their own little domiciles there, and I'm like,
Yeah, this isn't like, it looks like a pretty fancy operation.
Okay.
It seems like a really nice dentist's office.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, how sterile is this? And do
they put you completely out, or are you, because that's the other thing, is being under is one thing, but being under for a long time is the other part of it. So are they just giving him laughing gas or something? I don't know.
I don't know. Text in. I need. Do you have any ink at all anywhere on your body?
No.
Yeah, I don't either.
That's why I can't judge and say, like, oh, you're soft for not doing the whole day. Like, I don't know. It's got to suck.
I'm soft for just not having a tattoo at times, you know?
Yeah.
Like, especially because so many people haven't. Like, back in the day when you and I were growing up, the only people that had tattoos were bikers and guys in the Navy, you know?
They were illegal in a lot of places, right?
Were they really?
They started getting popular when they started being legal. You could go find a... Yeah, it used to be you had to go to certain areas to get a tattoo.
Yeah.
It wasn't... Kids, you'll notice, go back and watch NBA footage from the 80s. Very few tattoos out there. And if there was any, one guy might have one tattoo or something that said mom.
Yeah. I remember the quarterback of our football team, Tony Rice, back in the late 80s, got like a big tattoo on his arm. And that was huge news around campus. Like, oh my God, Tony Rice got a tattoo. Now the news would be like, oh my God, the quarterback doesn't even have a tattoo on his arm.
Let's see. In the past, some areas in the U.S., like New York City, had temporary bans on tattoos.
Okay.
So I guess it was a
not
more
anymore.
Of a local. Sounds like there were blue laws, kind of, but it wasn't. It just wasn't as common or popular.
Yeah, nothing's banned in New York City anymore, especially pot. Just walk through Times Square. Have you walked through Times Square at all in the last couple years since they legalized weed in New York?
Yeah. I know. It smells like a dispensary.
The whole place, Times Square, the entire place smells like weed. Which is not a horrible smell, except when you can't turn it off, you know, like it's when you can't walk away from it. Like, all right, I don't mind a little secondhand smoke. You know, I'm not a weed smoker, but I don't mind a little secondhand smoke. I just don't like to hang out somewhere for hours on end where it smells like secondhand smoke. All right, we got a text and I'm like, okay, this person, come on now, but it's middle screen. Y'all have to ask Casario about the draft, especially the guys the Texans took. Thanks, middle screen. Thank you, middle screen. I appreciate that. Okay, Tank had multiple artists do that leg all at the same time, somebody said.
Oh, wow.
He hired a dream team of tattoo artists.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I wonder if it took less time than a normal one. So maybe he wasn't. My concern was that he would be under for a long time.
Yeah.
But maybe it ended up not taking that long.
Maybe.
Relative to what you'd expect.
Maybe.
Because the way they do it, back in the old day when the only people that had full sleeves were Polynesians who had did it as part of an actual ritual.
Yes.
That's brutal when they do it the traditional way because they're doing it with shells, and it takes it's like they go into a trance because it's such a long and painful process.
And some of them have the tattoos that like start at the like right above your belly button and go down to your knees.
Yeah.
The first time I ever saw that was High Chief Peter Maivia. That's The Rock's grandfather. He was a wrestler. I'm like, okay, those can't be real. Like he's tattooed like his entire lower body. Is one gigantic ritualistic tattoo, like front
which
back.
You wouldn't you never saw that except on Polynesian
Samoan
dudes.
Polynesian wrestlers.
Yeah.
Let's see.
What would you get, Sean?
On a tattoo?
Yeah, what would you get? I'm kind of curious.
I would probably something WWE. I would imagine. Yeah, something WWE. I would. Guess.
I would get a rose on my ankle. And then I would get a dancing bear on my other ankle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A Grateful Dead bear, of course, not a.
Yeah.
And then I get a styrofoam cup. Yeah.
I would get the old WWE logo somewhere on my body. That's what I would do. Old school WWE logo. The tattoo parlor had the anesthesia equipment on site because it used to be a Papa John's. Okay. Someone texted that in. That's right. Don't forget, Tank got shot. That's right. Tank could be on one of those.
I said that.
Oh, you did? I didn't. Okay, sorry. I was probably reading the text page. My apologies. Yeah.
So what do you? Oh, as far. Oh no. But I didn't make it as far as I didn't.
Like the YOLO
just talked
part
about
of
the,
it.
The trauma that he's endured. But yeah. The YOLO part of it and the horror show. Yeah, this is, I don't know, are we going to see...
Are we going to see Darth Tank?
He's going to come back and he's just going to be a complete different dude. Never smiling or anything.
Yeah.
Just out for blood.
Yeah.
I like this. The horror movie theme of it is intriguing.
Yeah.
And interesting.
You, from now on, shall be known as Darth Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
Darth Hands. Something. I need something. What would Tank's Sith name be? Yeah.
I wonder if CJ was sitting in the waiting room knitting to try to calm his nerves and trying to choke back the tears and just happy when he saw Tank came out from recovery.
Waited for
the doctor slash tattoo artist came out and said, Mr.
Pulls the rubber gloves off. It's like, It was a successful tattoo.
And then CJ breaks down on the floor.
Tears of joy.
Thank you. Yes.
Tears of joy. All right. The other thing.
Just call me Tank when you get home and let me know you're okay.
Let me know you're okay. The talk yesterday of a new headquarters for the Texans, that was the last big topic at the golf tournament yesterday. That they could, and if I had to bet, they will be moving their headquarters at some point. I don't base that on any information other than this sounds like an idea that that has a lot of positives to it.
Yeah.
That the team is viewing as something that could be really good for the city if they build some sort of entertainment district around it, wherever it may. It lands in Katy, if it lands up in the, you know, up north, or maybe it lands somewhere in Harris County, who knows. But the Texans are thinking strongly about moving their practice facility and their business offices off-site. And if you're wondering, like, wow, that'd be a big change, they're one of four teams in the NFL that has their operations inside their home stadium right now. The norm in the NFL, by far, is to conduct your business and practice off-site somewhere from your stadium.
Yeah, I feel like that's a little bit misleading because there are some teams that have their practice facility right next to the stadium. But the difference is that everything's all in one spot. The weird thing about the Texans setup and where it makes it inefficient both from a front office and from the actual football operation side of things is that, you know, there are a lot of facilities where the training room, the locker room, the weight room are all in this one spot, and then you have the practice fields right outside the doors of all of that. So when the trainers are working with somebody, they can work on the training room stuff, then go out and maybe take a look at him out on the field, and all of that. Like with the Texans, it's kind of an ordeal to just get from the training room over to the practice field.
Because
the large majority of the time, there's something going on, and it's not just the rodeo. It's all the different events that come in, or in just prepping for the next event. It's there's concrete out there on the actual playing field for game day, the stadium field. So it's just really inefficient when you're trying to make things as efficient as possible. It's kind of a pain in the butt. You know, it's rich folks' problem. You know, I mean, it's not like it's the worst thing in the world, but you're comparing it to other situations where people can kind of just have a more efficient operation. From a player side of thing, I would prefer to have everything all right there where you're done with practice. It's not a 5-minute walk back to the stadium. You just get in the cold tank. And then if you have to go and do anything extra, all of that, it's kind of clunky the way it's set up right now.
Well, and I think the biggest thing you bring up is just that it's not that stadium, that whole thing is not theirs. You know, like they share it with so many people and so many entities, whether it's dates that, you know, whether it's even just graduations. The rodeo, the rodeo's not there at a time of year, running at a time of year where there's heavy Texans practices going on, but it is at a time of year where the staff is trying to get in there to work on the draft, and there are players that are coming into the building, and it's just, you're right, it's first world problems, but it's problems that most NFL teams don't have to deal with.
Well, right, it's a first world problem, but you're competing against other teams that have first world problems too, so you're it's kind of like... Yeah, does a NASCAR driver worry way, way more about his fuel injectors than the average person? Yes, they do, because they're competing against other people that have better fuel injectors. From my extensive knowledge and understanding of the motorsports.
Of fuel injectors. Dolly Parton, Colin. Dolly Parton. That's what my tattoo would be. Dolly Parton. My favorite individual on the face of the earth. Maybe not a face, her face, but maybe her birthday or something like that.
Her birthday. Yeah.
Some tribute to Dolly Parton. Yes.
Personally, I'd like to have something meaningful about family members that I care about.
I'd put Amy on the other leg, but, you know, I'd have a slide of a sleeve on one leg of Dolly Parton and a sleeve of Amy on the other leg, but yes.
I kind of like, I think I do, I wouldn't mind going full Memento, like the movie Memento, where as I get older, I just kind of have little reminders on my body.
Yeah.
So I'll put them everything from the perspective where I can read it.
Dude.
And just simple stuff, like remember to poop today, stuff like that.
Okay.
You know, but I'll have it in Latin. So it'll look badass.
Those aren't mementos. Those are reminders.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, the movie Memento.
Oh, the movie
he has
Memento.
A bunch of the movie Memento.
I got you.
Oh yeah.
I haven't
it's
seen
this
Memento.
Guy who just has he has amnesia, like ongoing. He has no short. He has
got
no long term memory at all. So he writes all these notes that are supposed to be reminders to himself.
Dude, if it was true mementos, like reminders of different stages and events in your life, you would have one of the more interesting set of body tattoos. You got a lot of good stories. From
I do.
Your years, yeah.
But I'm trying to forget.
You'd
those
be one of the more interesting
part.
People. I go take your clothes off so I can read about your life.
A picture of Blobby the Rooster.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's what.
Picture you nervously on the phone telling people it's a corporation. Yeah.
Picture of me giving. God, that was a story I didn't tell the other day. I can't remember. It was for one of the questions of the day, but it was my dad. When I was 16 or 17 years old, he had a car that didn't have license plates. So he said, "Hey, son, let me just," he called me Seth, actually, he didn't say son. I just need to borrow your license plates for a couple days. So I was like, "Okay, dad." And my dad drove to New York City. Fell asleep because he liked to go like 72 hours at a time with no sleep.
Oh,
that was
God.
His thing. He got to New York City where he had an apartment. He crashed and forgot, you know, didn't wake up in time to move his car with my plates illegally on it to the other side of the street. So his car got towed. But he didn't have the money to go get it out. And thank God this was before they had everything in online databases and everything.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting there trying to figure out, like, what do I – like, okay – I can't dime out my dad, but I can't say that I gave him the plates. I didn't even know it was illegal. You know, I was like 16 or 17 years old. I'd bought my Mazda GLC with the money I got working
That's
for $500
funny.
With the money I got working in summers. But I couldn't, then I didn't, it was 2 months before I got my plates back. And somehow, I don't know how he got out of it or whatever. I guess it was just the towing company had it. I don't know, man.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
So I'll have the old Mazda GLC license plates on there.
Yeah, that's
point.
What I'm saying. Yeah, there's a story behind all. Seth, tell me about those license plates on the back of your calf. Yeah, man. All right, so we'll see what happens with the Texans and a new headquarters. I got one of the funniest tweets I got yesterday was after, or it might have been right after the game was over. There was a listener, Seth, who was so agitated that right after the Rockets game was over on Sunday, that one of the first things that popped up, I think it popped up on their Twitter timeline. I don't know if it popped up on TV, but Jalen Green has a Wingstop commercial going on right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I saw a lot of the Wingstop hate going on.
Yeah, like he has a Wingstop commercial where he's like, he's walking out of the stadium and it's like a paparazzi thing. The flashes are going off and then he gets in the back of a limo. Because I guess every player leaves the stadium now in the back of a limo, sarcastic.
Yeah.
And he just starts eating some Wingstop, like slow motion. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you gotta save some for yourself, you know. And he's eating chicken strips. And boy, this listener was so agitated. They're like, why are they showing a commercial of him after he scored 8 points? I'm like, I didn't want to explain to him how traffic works on a broadcast. Like, it's already slotted, sir.
You know who's got to feel like that or did all year long was every time. Remember both Titans games? There were so many Will Levis mayonnaise commercials.
Oh, yeah.
And Titans fans have got it. They were seeing those all year long. Will Levis doing that, the full Jean-Claude Van Damme split with the mayo commercial.
Do you get agitated during, like right now, the Astros are terrible hitting the baseball. All of them are bad. Some are worse than others, but they're all below the standards of what they normally are. Like Altuve is not abjectly terrible, but by Altuve standards, he's in a major slump right now. And when an HEB commercial pops up, you know, an HEB, you know, people would get so pissed that Lance McCullers being in HEB commercials when he's rehabbing his, you know, second arm surgery and whatnot.
That's where I know every time I see one, I'm like, that's it. No, Central
you get
Market.
I do too.
I will know. But then their produce department lures me back in.
Yeah.
I need some seedless grapes. And I'm like, oh, I got to go. Nobody does it like Central Market.
These HEB commercials that pop up during Astro games when they're doing, but they're losing 8-1, and then they're losing 8-1. You're angry. They just committed 3 errors. They're going to lose their 4th in a row, and then this pops up.
Make me snacks for the ball game.
Make me a HEB snacks.
Buy me some brisket and queso too. Oh, and good enough for the whole crew.
Let me flip all these burgers
and poppers grilled by the flame.
All right, they're not going to get a whole commercial out of us, all right? Give us some live reads, HEB, and we'll play the whole thing. Dude, it's in major rotation right now. And I'm still getting used to Mauricio Dubon being in HEB commercials or any commercial at all, really. But Mauricio Dubon, like Jeremy Pena is just going with the flow and singing in his normal voice. Altuve gets a little bit pitchy at the end of his first line. But boy, Mauricio Dubon opens up his mouth holding some brisket and queso and like honey is dripping off of his lips.
Buy me some brisket and queso too.
I mean, that's not bad. Buy me some brisket and cake. I feel like he's really trying to get to a place right there. Mauricio.
No, he's very, very likable. He's a hard man to hate.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No matter what's going on. I guess my viewing experience where I kind of start to, I let the Astros filter their current performance at the plate filter into it is when I'm watching The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, these lucky bastards. None of these people have to watch the Astros at the plate.
It's just bad.
Boy, I'll tell you what. Oh, I'd give anything to be a handmaid right now. Yeah.
I just get in a bad mood.
I'd rather go through all of this than watch the Astros try to hit a baseball.
Give me some more Dubon, please. Please.
Buy me some brisket and queso too.
Thank you. I need that. Just keep that handy all show long, Colin. I just need a little. It's a B12 shot for me right there. I don't like it.
One more. No.
One more.
Buy me some brisket and queso too.
Sorry, Seth. Yeah, sorry. I needed one more. I apologize.
That's my least favorite HEB commercial of all time.
Really?
I can't do it. That song. I cannot take that song.
Buy me some brisket and
I didn't do that. Colin did that.
It's not even them just
don't
singing.
Do that.
It's just take me out to the ballpark. Yeah. I hate that song so much. I like it when it's played in an organ at the ballpark. And that's it. But the problem is that song has been there's so many parodies out of that song with different lyrics and everything that it just brings back every schmaltzy hacking attempt at comedy or whatever else it is over the times. Plus, it's been used in some kind of... I feel like it's been in some movies sometimes where some horrible things happen too. They try to they do the contrast of like a happy song in the background, while meanwhile somebody's getting
there's about to be some terrorist attack at a baseball stadium or something like that. The contrast, I can't promise I won't play Dubon again, Seth. I just want you to know that, but I won't do it now. I'm good. I'm good for now.
Who wrote that song?
I don't know.
I think it was Benjamin Franklin.
I know Seth won't be
close.
Getting...
It was Albert von Tiltzer. It was.
Called Tiltsy by his friends. Yeah. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Appreciate you tuning in. All right. There is one major voice out there in the NBA community that makes a huge suggestion for the Houston Rockets this offseason. We will have that for you coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we're going to do a pettycast at the top of the hour, so be on the lookout for that. 8 o'clock today, pettycast. It's very interesting to me, with the Rockets, the mention of Jalen Green this morning. We did a segment earlier this morning where we played some of the audio, including from Jalen Green himself, being very hard on his performance in the first round of the playoffs. Ime Udoka and Fred VanVleet kind of took up for Jalen, said he's a younger guy. A lot of you are echoing that. Hey, he's only this such and such an age. The mere pointing out of the fact that the Rockets have more options than the normal team does with a young core like this has people saying, and I apologize, the text page has gone nuts since this text came earlier in the show, but the how people construe the mere mention of the options the Rockets have as us being adamant about trading Jalen Green. Why are you guys so adamant about trading Jalen Green? I'm not adamant about trading Jalen Green. Now, I will say he's not untouchable to me. If it were the right deal, I would move Jalen Green. But the degree
we didn't even mention trading Jalen Green when we talked about him earlier.
Right, we
didn't. We didn't. We just talked about where I specifically said I can see an avenue where if. With the improved play of everybody else around him, and if you inject something into it, then you can get everything you can out of Jalen Green. He's just not, he's not going to be the alpha. It's hard to envision him being a genuine and true alpha of a championship caliber basketball team.
I'm not anti-trading Jalen Green, but I'm also not standing in front of Toyota Center with a trade Jalen Green sign or hiring an airplane to fly a banner over the stadium or something to trade him. Like, if it's the right deal, I would trade Jalen Green if it's the right deal. So, and you know who else would, I believe? Kendrick Perkins, that's who. Kendrick Perkins with his prescription for what ails the Rockets and how they should take care of it this offseason.
If I'm the Rockets, I got to address the issue of shooting and a closer. And I'm going after Kevin Durant. I package up Jalen Green, Cam Whitmore, and Jabari Smith and some draft picks and go out and get KD. Not Giannis, but Kevin Durant. And you pair him alongside Amon Thompson, Shangoon with Fred VanVleet. You keep big Steven Adams, and now you're rocking with something.
All right, so the trigger point in that trade, because I give Perk credit, he actually had an actual trade ready to go. It wasn't just they should get Kevin Durant. That trade that he just threw out there, it is all comes down to how you feel about Jalen Green. If you feel like Jalen Green is going to be an all-star, you don't do that deal. If you feel like Jalen Green is just a good player who's expendable, I think there's less of a chance that Phoenix does that deal just because now you got Jalen Green and Devin Booker on the same team. There's a little bit of overlap with those two guys.
Yeah, that's the tricky dynamic. Now, it could be a three-way trade or whatever it might be.
Yeah, that's true.
If it's a three-team trade or more, there's not any part of me that looks at Jalen Green as an untouchable guy that you just flat out can't get rid of if it means also bringing in back somebody like Kevin Durant. I'm totally 100% okay with it. But I'm also, as I've said every single time I think we've talked about this, you gotta try to. It was kind of like it was with Jadeveon Clowney, where, all right, was he worth the number two overall pick? No, he didn't play up to that, but he's still a very, very good football player. So you got to emotionally detach yourself from what your expectations may have been at one point in time and just treat it for what it is. It's okay. Yes, Jalen Green is still a very, very valuable asset, and he does very capable of doing some really, really good things. Personally, I don't think that he shows a lot of sign or evidence that he's going to be the alpha on a championship caliber team. Mm-hmm. But I think he's still very much worth keeping around.
Yeah.
And if Durant were to come in here, yeah, you're going to, just like every other guy on the team, every other player on that team is going to look like a better basketball player as soon as Kevin Durant gets on the floor. So, yeah, I'm not dead set on you have to trade Jalen Green. I'm just not. I just don't have emotional attachments to him like that. You have to keep him around.
So you're starting, if you did that trade, because you're trading two pieces of, significant pieces of your rotation in that deal. Jalen Green's your starting two guard and your leading scorer. And Jabari Smith Jr. was a starter for 2 years until he got hurt and Amen Thompson took his spot. But their track record defensively, mostly defensively, with Jabari on the, playing and not playing the numbers bear out that he is a difference maker on this team, even just coming off the bench. How would you feel about a starting lineup of Fred VanVleet, Amen Thompson as your backcourt, and Dylan Brooks, KD, and Alpi as your frontcourt? That's a pretty nice starting five right there, I would say.
Yeah, I'd get excited about that.
I would too.
And then the big question marks are, okay, how does Reed Sheppard come along over the course of the next couple of years?
Yep.
In the backcourt.
Tari Eason is a guy off the bench for you. Yes. Reed Sheppard, how he comes along. Now, are you hanging on to the lottery pick that you have this year in that deal? Or are the draft picks that Kendrick Perkins is talking about, are they some of these other future picks that you have? This pick that you have in this draft is a very tangible pick because it's going to be at worst at the back end of the top 10, and at best at the top of the draft.
I know that. Look, the Rockets have drafted really, really well, and that's where I'm not tied to the draft picks whatsoever. I mean, I don't want you to be an idiot about it. I don't have a preference in terms of which picks you give up. I'm more excited about the growth of the younger guys from year to year over the next couple of years.
The only reason I would love to hold on to this pick is you've got the seven guys that you've drafted in the first round over the last few years. You are giving up three of those guys in that deal. So you've you've gutted your young core to some degree.
It was Jalen, Cam, and who?
And Jabari. Jabari and Jalen are significant parts of your rotation. Cam's going to get thrown into any deal that they end up doing. I feel pretty confident in that. I don't think there's a real future here with Cam Whitmore. He doesn't strike me as an Ime kind of guy. He seems like he's in a doghouse of some sort. And yet, he's got enough talent to where I think some of these teams that the Rockets could be trading with are intrigued by him. So I think he's going to be in whatever deal. The only reason I say keep, that's why I say, Seth, if there's any way you can hold on to that pick this year, because that is, you've traded three of your young guys in that deal. You at least know you're going to get a young guy with that. And I think, too, that might be a young guy they could get there, like the Knipple kid from Duke is who I see mocked to the Rockets a lot at nine. Who fills a need for you. Like, he's a sharpshooter, he fills a need for you. So that's the only reason I say that. Look, if it ended up being that pick and the three players, then we're just going to get excited about having a future Hall of Famer on the team and see if this can get you over the top in the playoffs and just pray that Kevin Durant stays healthy when he's here. Text message, Jalen Green's never going to be the alpha. He's never going to be the team leader or the something of the team. I don't know what you're trying to say there. He can be a very good role player, but he'll never be the alpha and the team leader that this team needs. I think that's what it boils down to is how you feel about, do you feel like Jalen Green can be the best player on a championship level team? And if the answer is no, then you have to entertain trade offers trade packages that have him in there. If the answer to that is no, then he's not untouchable. The guys that are untouchable are the guys that you feel can be the best player on a championship level team. I don't know if I feel strongly that Çengün can be that guy, but I feel stronger he can be that guy, certainly, than Jalen Green. And I feel strongly that Amen Thompson can be that guy. The best player on a championship.
Yeah, Amen Thompson is probably the best story or revelation to come out of the playoffs in just one play? As many conclusions as you can draw.
Yeah.
Just in that, because you saw the growth through the actual playoffs themselves. Yeah. Games 1 through 4, he didn't look like himself. Game 5, 6, and 7, he just poured it on. And the ability on both sides of the ball to be a huge factor against a really good team was impressive.
The narrative around young players in the NBA playoffs is always that it takes multiple years for them to get to this stage where they're capable of doing what they did in the regular season, do it in the postseason. Amen Thompson did it through the course of 7 games. He did through the course of 7 games what it takes most young players at least 1 or 2 full postseasons to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And the other part, so the person who was asking us why the person who was asking about why are we so adamant for a trade, he wasn't, the ones I read at least, he wasn't specifically saying that we were saying they need to trade Jalen Green. It was that he doesn't think there needs to be a trade at all.
Yeah.
I think that the thought that you can just bide your time and wait because, hey, inertia or momentum or something, like that just, we've seen that fail time and time again. The promising young team that, oh, look, they're right on the brink.
Yeah.
That, especially though with this team, they don't have shooters. They don't have guys who can score. They were a top 5 defense. They can't score enough points in getting the actual ball in the hoop. I don't think it's as clear or as obvious that they have those shooters that are going to be death blows in the playoffs or what have you, other than Reed Sheppard and a couple guys, but that's still banking on development. When you have an excess of draft picks, I don't think it's overly aggressive or short-sighted to say, all right, yeah, you go, let's not overthink this. Yeah. We can bring in guys who can score as those other young guys that are still on the roster are continuing to develop.
You're in the window now, man. I mean, you're the 2. I know you got knocked out in the first round. That's not a normal 7 seed you were playing. You got knocked out in the first round in 7 games. You were the 2 seed in the West, and you've got a ton of good young players on your team and the opportunity to go do something else. You are in the window now. You're in the front end of the window, but you're in the window now.
Well, and that's the old rule of thumb of having to have at least 2 all-star, 2 stud players, 2 bona fide all-stars to win a championship. Who are the young guys right now that are going to be 2 of those guys? I mean, the Şengün potentially, but he's not there yet. I don't think it's going to be Jalen Green.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to get a championship caliber, Amen Thompson maybe develops into that guy. That's one guy. Who are your superstars that can anchor an actual championship squad?
Yeah. I've been critical of Şengün, but I think Şengün, I mean, he made the All-Star team this
year.
Like he can
no,
be
he totally
guy.
Can.
Yeah.
But is he that guy already?
Right.
He still needs to take one more step offensively.
No question.
So,
I see what you're saying.
That's one guy.
Yeah, I see what
so,
you're saying.
So, like, there's nothing, you don't have to be ashamed of trying to import a superstar in this league where so many recent championship teams have been teams with imported superstars.
Yep. All right, Pettycast time. We got a lot. This is a basketball-heavy Pettycast. That happens in the NBA playoffs, especially when James Harden gets knocked out in a Game 7. So get your petties ready. 713-572-4600. Perkins had a hell of an overpay in that scenario. Somebody texted in. It was a good talk radio scenario by Perk right there. Pettycast coming up next. Stay there.